This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Earlier today, Granma, the official publication of the Cuban Communist Party, published a letter from Fidel Castro to the Cuban people, a message from the commander-in-chief. Castro announced that he will neither aspire to nor accept the positions of president of the State Council and commander-in-chief when the Cuban National Assembly meets in just a few days. In other words, Fidel Castro will step aside. Castro's health has declined in recent years, and in 2006, after emergency surgery, he ceded power to his brother Raul. But today's announcement officially ends his long reign in Cuba. Still, many are wondering how much Cuba will really change now and how that change might affect U.S. policy. If you have questions about what will happen in Cuba, give us a call. If you've spoken to a relative in Cuba, we want to hear from you. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can also comment on our blog. It is at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the program, we'll talk to Stephen Erlinger, Jerusalem bureau chief for the New York Times. He's scheduled to leave that post in a few weeks. But first, Cuba after Castro. And joining us now from Havana is Anthony Bodle. He is the Havana bureau chief for Reuters. Good to have you with us, Anthony.
Hello, Lynn. How are you?
Tell us, how have Cubans reacted? What's the initial reaction there to Fidel Castro's announcement?
Well, Cubans have reacted without much surprise. They knew that Fidel Castro was gravely ill, and they've taken it in their stride. Some have received the news with sadness, others with expectations of that the Raul Castro will improve the economy, but most are convinced that socialism, or one-party state in Cuba, will continue for the time being.
Remind us, when was the last time Cubans actually saw Castro? Anthony, are you there? Have we lost Anthony? Unfortunately, I think we lost that line from Havana. But fortunately, we have Peter Kornbluh standing by with us in the studio, and we may get that line back. If we do, we'll go back to Anthony. Peter Kornbluh is the director of the Cuban Documentation Project at the National Security Archive in Washington, D.C., and he's with me here in Studio 3A. Thanks for being with us, Peter.
It's a pleasure to be here. Let me just answer the question that Tony Bodo was about to answer, which is that Cubans have not seen Castro in public since July of 2006. They've seen him on television, and they've seen photographs of him meeting with foreign leaders such as Lula from Brazil most recently and Hugo Chavez from Venezuela as well. He's obviously frailer, although his mind appears to be quite alert at this point.
Interesting what Anthony Bodle was saying, which is that the people in Cuba, not particularly surprised or it sounds like excited about this because they knew he was ill. This has sort of been a fait accompli in a way, I guess.
That's right. And he's been saying in his public writings for some time that he's been content to sit on the sidelines but to offer his opinion through a column that he now writes called Reflections of the Commander-in-Chief. He's going, however, officially now from being Commander-in-Chief to being Commentator-in-Chief in that even though he's retiring, he is still going to write this opinion column for the Communist Party's youth newspaper, Juventud Rebelde.
And still, this was a reign of almost 50 years. There is significance in this moment, is there not?
Oh, absolutely. And I have to say, you know, most leaders who've been around this long in a country like Cuba, but most leaders like Fidel Castro don't leave power voluntarily. They usually leave in a box or they leave at the end of a barrel of a gun during a military coup. And in some ways, I think Castro has cemented a more positive legacy for himself and a smooth transition in his country by voluntarily stepping aside, making it clear he's not going to cling to power, and overseeing from the sidelines a very smooth transition to his brother and to younger members of the Cuban Communist Party.
But should there be much expectation of change at this moment?
There's great expectation of economic changes in Cuba, and I think Tony Bodo would have gotten into this with you if his line hadn't died.
I think I just heard that we have him back on the line. Is that correct? Anthony Bodel, you're there?
Yes, then we're back.
Oh, good.
Got cut off.
Okay. We were just talking here with Peter Kornbluh about the significance of this moment. As you said, many Cubans pretty much expecting it. And yet, how much change do they now expect might happen with his brother Raul in charge?
Well, most Cubans, particularly the more informed ones, such as economists, do expect a series of economic measures to be announced months ahead. Minimal changes, certainly not fundamental structural changes that would lead Cuba to a free market economy such as China under communist rule, but minimal things such as allowing Cubans to purchase, buy and sell their own cars and their homes, travel more freely abroad, stay at hotels that are reserved for tourists at the present moment, things like that that would make life easier in Cuba.
Now, Raul has been in power for more than a year. Have things already started changing in any way?
So far, he's done very little, delivered very little, but he has raised expectations that these things are going to happen. Cuba watchers think that the fact that Fidel Castro is still around serves as a brake on any changes that would signify altering the egalitarian character of Cuban society. And now, with Raul taking over as Cuba's new leader, some of these changes might go ahead more quickly.
And just one other question, is there any talk or sense in Cuba that there may now be an opportunity for a shift in relations with other countries, especially the United States?
Well, Cuba has very good relations at the present time with most of Latin America, very good relations with China, Venezuela, of course, Iran. The question is, what will happen with relations to the United States? After all, the United States today is the main source of food imports, ironically. And Raul Castro has extended an olive branch on a couple of occasions towards the U.S. government to sit down and discuss their differences. But in his most recent address on this issue, he said it wouldn't happen while President Bush is still in the White House. They're looking beyond the November elections towards maybe a democratic administration that would ease restrictions on Cuba.
Anthony Bodel, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Anthony Bodel is the Havana bureau chief for Reuters, and he joined us by phone from Havana, Cuba. And we are talking about Fidel Castro's announcement that he is stepping aside as the leader of Cuba. If you'd like to join the discussion, if you have any questions or comments, give us a call. The number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. With me in the studio is Peter Kornbluh. He's the director of the Cuba Documentation Project at the National Security Archive. And Peter, we were just hearing from Anthony Bodel that there is a sense in Cuba that things are not going to change with the United States until President Bush is out of office. We have been hearing from the candidates today about this announcement today. What are we hearing from the candidates?
Well, basically, we're hearing from the candidates what you'd expect, which is that when things really change in Cuba, they might consider changing U.S. policy if they become president. Hillary Clinton's position on Cuba has been very, very similar to George Bush's. She has a political calculus that she doesn't want to risk losing the swing state of Florida if she becomes the nominee over Cuba issues like Al Gore did in November of 2000. Barack Obama has taken a step beyond that. He's called for more open travel for Cuban-American families, not for all Americans, just for Cuban-American families. But he's also said something very important, which is that he's willing to have a dialogue with the leaders of countries that are considered enemies of the United States. And Cuba is on the list that he has said that he would talk to. And civil discourse in the future, for the next president of the United States, I think would be a very, very important step forward. I've been working on the history of the untold history of dialogue between Cuba and the United States over the last five decades. And in fact, almost every president except the current one has actually engaged in back-channel talks and various types of negotiations with Cuba. So it's not a heresy to do this. It's something that has been done before and could be done by the next president.
Let's see if we can take a call now. We've got a call from Chris in Plymouth, New Hampshire. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Go ahead.
My question is, there seem to be comments right now by Obama, Bush, even the Prime Minister in Sweden regarding Castro's decision, and we haven't heard anything from Chavez. And when Peter was talking about how the fact that Castro has stepped down on his own and it'll leave, you know, a positive note on when history writes the books on him, how does that affect Chavez and his, you know, quest to hold on to power?
Well, if Chavez is around for that long, which is probably unlikely, he certainly will look up to his mentor Fidel Castro. But I think Castro is in some ways in a league by his own. A league on his own at this point as the longest-lasting leader in any country. And what's momentous about today is that era is coming to an end, and we're going to begin the post-Fidel Castro era in Cuba and in U.S.-Cuban relations.
All right. Thanks for your call, Chris. How much will Castro still be pulling the strings behind the scenes, however?
Well, he in his resignation letter, he said he was going to remain a soldier in the battle of ideas. Now, he's retiring, but he's not really resigning, so to speak. He's still going to be there, and he's still going to be writing his opinion. On the other hand, I think that he realizes and that in discussions that have obviously taken place with the Cuban leadership, they realize that they have to move forward and meet the expectations that Raul has unleashed over the last 19 months. And that is their challenge, to make good on the promises of economic change in Cuba.
When we come back, Cuba's Fidel Castro ceded power to his brother today. We'll learn a little more about Raul Castro, Cuba's acting president, and we'll take more of your calls at 800-989-8255 or send us an email to talk@npr.org. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Fidel Castro resigned as Cuba's president early today, saying he would not accept a new term and effectively positioning his 76-year-old brother Raul as his successor. We'll hear a little bit more about Raul in a minute. Right now, my guest is Peter Kornbluh. He's director of the Cuba Documentation Project at the National Security Archive. And we want to hear from you. If you have questions about what will happen in Cuba, give us a call. If you've spoken to a relative in Cuba, we want to hear from you also. The number 800-989-8255, and the email address is talk@npr.org. You can also read what other listeners have to say at our blog. That's npr.org/blogofthenation. And we're going to take a call now. We're going to go to Magdi in Miami. Hi, Magdi.
Hi. I'm calling because my husband talked to his mom in Cuba.
Uh-huh.
And she usually tells us about what's going on over there. She told us that the work week and the work schedule and work habits of Cuba have changed over the last year. They're requiring people to show up for work. Their wages are still the same. They're also requiring people to do voluntary work like before. And also that they're starting to charge income tax on the wages.
Hmm.
And another thing that they're doing is that they had this thing called electricity revolution, where they were handing out electric appliances to people so that they can start paying more for their electric bill.
And just one other thing, I just want to make clear that your husband spoke to his mother today. Did they speak today after this announcement?
Well, he talks to her every couple weeks.
Oh, okay.
This has been going on for a year.
So this is what you've been hearing for the past year or so since Raul has effectively been in power.
Yeah, he's been doing some changes. Also, another thing that we heard was that there was a large cache of weapons that was stolen in November, December, and the reason why we know it's true is because the carnivals that take place every December were canceled. And the reason the government gave for that was that there was going to be a really large cold front, which never happens.
Okay. All right. Thanks for your call, Magdi.
Thank you.
Peter Kornblau, I know you were, I think you've been in Cuba recently, haven't you?
It's been a year.
It's been a year.
Yeah.
Did you see changes? I mean, did you notice any change there?
Well, I went to Cuba three or four months after Fidel got sick, in part mm-hmm. to find out what was really the matter with him. The CIA was saying that he had terminal stomach cancer, and it took about 5 minutes to find out that he was suffering from diverticulitis and that he wasn't terminally ill. I think your caller's pointing to the type of changes that Raul is trying to bring to Cuba, which is to make the economy, to make the economic sectors much more efficient if possible, to try and address corruption and kind of a mindset that is set in terms of management, supervision, et cetera. He has been commander-in-chief of the Cuban Army for all these years, and the Cuban Army has really been out front, as Brian Littell will tell you on this show, in kind of modernizing the Cuban economy. They've been involved in agricultural cooperatives. They've been heavily involved in the tourism sector. So in some ways, Raul has some ideas about modernizing the economy, and he's starting to put them in place.
And I think that Brian Littell is standing by now. Brian Littell is the author of After Fidel, The Inside Story of Castro's Regime and Cuba's Next Leader, and he is a senior research associate at the Institute for Cuban and Cuban American Studies at the University of Miami. Welcome to the program, Brian.
Thank you very much.
Tell us some more about Raul Castro.
Well, Raul is a very, very interesting, contradictory, perplexing individual. He's been misunderstood and mischaracterized, especially in Cuba and among many Cuban Americans. And it's easy to understand why he's been misunderstood and underestimated. It's because he's worked in the shadows for all of these years. He's worked in Fidel's shadow. He doesn't seek or like the limelight. He's not charismatic. He's not a performer. He's not a political performer as Fidel is. And but he is the manager. He has been operating behind the scenes as the most important, most powerful administrator and manager through all of the years of the Cuban Revolution. So he's been indispensable.
And so Fidel has been relying on him, it sounds like you're saying,
oh, absolutely.
All these many years.
There's been no other figure in the almost 50 years of this revolution as indispensable as Raul has been.
But to what degree do you think he can take Cuba in a different direction at this point, or will he? Does he have any desire to really?
Oh yes, I think he does. I think he's already moving out in new directions. His leadership style is what so far during his interregnum has been distinguishing his leadership from Fidel's. Remember, he's been in power now. Raul has been in power for 18 or 19 months, and the leadership style that he's asserting and demonstrating is one that's, I think, being accepted very favorably by the Cuban population. Raul gives very few speeches, and they're short. They're to the point. Mm. They're succinct. He doesn't grandstand. He's not devoting himself, as Fidel always did, to foreign policy, internationalist priorities. Raul is devoting himself to problem solving, and there are an awful lot of domestic problems that he's devoting himself to. And I think the Cuban people probably appreciate that. They recognize that this is a guy who's going to be paying more attention to the day-by-day issues.
But he is 76 years old. So is anybody else out there waiting in the wings? I mean,
I think that's going to be happening now. Now that the logjam at the top has been broken, now that Fidel is stepping aside, Raul will, I think, have a much freer hand to begin designating a third, a fourth in the line of succession. And I think there'll be a cascading of leadership, senior leadership reappointments.
Are there any names any people you could mention at this point that are?
I've always thought that Carlos Laje he's a vice president and a member of the party Politburo. I've always thought that he stood a very good chance of rising in the hierarchy, maybe becoming the third man. He might even become a kind of prime minister. He's 20 years younger than Raul. He's a medical doctor, a pediatrician, and he has a reputation for favoring liberalizing economic reforms.
All right. If you can stay with us for a moment,
sure.
We'll take a call. We're going to go to Rudy. I think Rudy is in Iowa. Hi, Rudy.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm a Cuban American. I was back about 2.5-3 years ago, and I couldn't find anybody that liked Castro, but they have a dilemma. Okay, Castro or the regime owns them now. What's going to happen once he's gone? Are we going to go back to the 50s? Because Cuban people don't want to be owned by anybody, and that's what would happen once he's gone. The Cuban Americans, not myself, I haven't gotten a lot of money, but they're going to go back and they're going to own all the factories, all the shops. And on top of that, my family has houses and other properties. Am I going to go out there and kick a guy out that's lived there for 40-some years?
You know, Rudy, may I respond?
Yes, go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
Rudy, I live in Miami. I'm not Cuban-American, but I live in Miami, teach at the university here. And I know many, many Cuban-Americans, and I can't tell you of a single one who plans to go back and reclaim some old family property. The other thing that you mentioned, I do think that that the regime in Cuba is facing a terrible problem with what I call the lost generation, the Cubans under 30. They're deeply, profoundly alienated, disaffected. They want to be more involved in the modern world. They want internet access. They want to be able to travel, which they can't. And there have been some recent incidents in Cuba that have very dramatically demonstrated the depth of the discontent of the young people.
I just want to say, Peter Kornblow, I think, had an opinion on this that you, I thought you might want to express.
Well, the issue is not whether, you know, if Fidel Castro is no longer there, then suddenly the exile community comes back to Cuba. I mean, what we have seen is a transition to Raul, a stable Cuban Communist Party, the institutionalization of the revolution after 50 years. The important point that Brian was making is that younger leadership is going to have to come up behind Raul. And Fidel Castro makes this point in his own kind of spoken autobiography, Fidel Castro, My Life, which has just been published by Scribner's in English. And he says in the last chapter, which is titled After Fidel What? He says, you know, Raul's just a few years behind me. We have a generational problem. But the younger leaders are obviously been cultivated because they share the vision of Raul and Fidel of socialism in Cuba. They're tough communists, but they're also enlightened and have a different view of the world, and hopefully will help Cuba open up.
But Cuba's old and young. Remember the days where the money controlled the country. And so who's going to be in power? Who's going to have the money to move forward? It will be the Cuban Americans, most likely. You know, I would love to go back and own a subway over there or whatever.
But that would necessitate the Cubans somehow opening up to that prospect, and I don't see that happening anytime soon.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Rudy. We're going to try and take another call now from Elena, and Elena is calling from Boston. Hello, Elena.
Yes, hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Quick question for Littell. I'm reading his book, and no one is talking about human rights violation, political dissidents in Cuba under Castro. Raul Castro, who has a pretty bloody past, is proven himself to be somebody who doesn't support basic human rights. What about reporters in Cuba? What about political dissidents? Can somebody address that under the new Raul Castro regime, which is more of the same?
Elena, when you get to the last chapter of my book, you're going to see that there is some discussion of that. And, of course, if you've read some of the first chapters, you know that I describe, in fact, I was the first person to reveal the first assassination, the first execution that Raul Castro personally took care of back 50 years ago in Mexico City. He's a man with a lot of blood on his hands, and people in Cuba recognize that. He had a very, very tough, dogmatic, Stalinist development. In the 60s and 70s, he was maybe the most hated and feared leader on the island. I don't think that Raul has any intention of liberalizing human rights or political freedoms. I do think he wants to open up for economic change, but not much for political change.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Elena. And Brian Littell, thanks so much for joining us today.
Sure. It's a pleasure.
Brian Littell is the author of After Fidel, the inside story of Castro's regime and Cuba's next leader. He joined us by phone from his office. And I just wanted to read to you, Peter Kornblow, before we bring our next guest in, an interesting email. Can you please explain the big deal about Cuba? I'm 34 and have never really understood why there is this huge animosity towards Cuba. That's from Betsy in Bloomington, Minnesota.
Well, that's that would take a long time to answer, but you know, the animosity falls into two camps. One is that before the Cuban Revolution, the United States had never really had a Latin American leader basically thumb his nose at the United States and say, we're going to exit your orbit of hegemony and go our own way. And Castro's revolution was really the first to successfully go ahead and move in that direction. And the second thing is that, of course, Castro, both Raul and Fidel, oversaw the coming of socialism and a more egalitarian-oriented state in Cuba, and they basically told the oligarchs that this wasn't going to be for them. And many of the, certainly all of the upper class and a good part of the upper middle class left Cuba and went to Miami, lost their property, fled to Miami, became very, very successful entrepreneurs and very politically savvy in pressing U.S. policy to be as absolutely hardline as possible. And certainly they didn't have a big argument with the early administrations, Kennedy and Johnson. But as the times changed and detente started with the Soviet Union, it was the political power of the anti-Castro lobby in Florida, which of course was an electoral swing state, that held U.S. policy hostage all these years and still obviously asserting itself in the current campaign for the president.
Peter Kornbluh is the director of the Cuba Documentation Project at the National Security Archive, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Joining us now is Jaime Sukliki. He's the director of the Miami Transition Project at the University of Miami. Thanks so much for being with us.
Yes, how are you doing?
Good. Tell me, how optimistic are you that things really will change in Cuba now that Fidel Castro has officially stepped aside?
Well, I don't think this is going to change much. I mean, what we have now is the final transfer of power from Fidel to Raul. Raul is not a reformist. He's 77 years old. He's going to be afraid to opening up the Cuban economy too much because he doesn't want to lose power. The lessons of Fidel have been that if you open up too much, look what happened to Eastern Europe. So we're going to have a very, very slow change in Cuba and a very difficult change. Raul may open up in the agricultural areas, may provide more food to try to mull through for the next few years. But I don't expect any major transformation of Cuba.
What about the American relations with Cuba as things move in this sort of slow pattern, as you're describing, as things move forward?
I don't think anything is going to happen under the Bush administration. Depending on who wins the elections in November, we may have a quicker move toward relations with Cuba. No country gives away their policy without a quid pro quo and without something in return. So most likely the United States will want some change in Cuba before they begin to change their policy. What this administration and others have been asking for is real change, structural change, opening up of the political process, transformation of the island. I don't know if the Cuban government is willing to offer those concessions to any of the candidates that are going to be the next president of the United States. I think they have support from Venezuela, from China. They're very close to Iran. Now they've gotten close to Russia. Brazil has offered significant amounts of credit to Cuba. So Cuba, from the point of view of the leadership of Cuba, they are not desperate for financial aid. They're not desperate for American technology. This is not the vision of a Raul Castro regime to modernize Cuba, to have an industrial Cuba. His vision is for a continuation of the system, an agricultural society producing nickel for export to Canada and hopefully finding some petroleum offshore the northern coast of Cuba, not to have to depend so much on Chavez. But we're not facing a Deng Xiaoping or a Gorbachev leader that is about to open Cuba and transform Cuba. So the United States has two options: either hold on to the policy in the hope that there will be a regime, probably after Raul, that will be more amicable and willing to provide the concessions, or lift the embargo and the travel ban without any concessions and without any change in Cuba. If that were to happen, nothing will not produce significant change in the island. American tourists will go there, will drink some mojitos, and visit the jineteras and the sport palaces and the places in Cuba, and will not have any impact like the Europeans, the Canadians, the Spaniards that for 15, 20 years have been going to Cuba in great number.
All right, Jaime Suliki, we have to say goodbye to you. We're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us.
You don't like what I'm saying.
No, actually, we're just at the end of the segment. I have to say to say goodbye.
Thank you.
Jaime Suliki is the director of the Miami Transition Project at the University of Miami, and Peter Kornbluh is still with us. We'll take a couple of calls when we return. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Peter Kornbluh is still with me in Studio 3A. He's the director of the Cuba Documentation Project at the National Security Archive in Washington, D.C. And we're going to try and take a couple more calls now. One from Juan, who is calling in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Juan.
Hello. I was just a little chagrined by what Mr. Kornbluh said earlier, that Fidel Castro is setting something of a positive note by stepping down, if you will, as he seems to be doing. But let's not confuse him with George Washington. This is not someone who has been elected to a term or to two terms, who is willingly putting down power in order for another constitutionally elected leader to follow him. What he's simply doing is recognizing that at the age of 81 and being unable to present himself in public, he has to play a behind-the-scenes role. And I would be much more impressed if he were to announce that political parties would be allowed to form, and that free elections would be held, and that perhaps even political prisoners like Dr. Oscar Bisset, who's an Afro-Cuban physician whose crime was setting up public lending libraries and is now serving 25 years imprisonment, would be released. So I don't feel that Fidel Castro is doing anything other than acceding to the dictates of biology and pathology. That's my comment.
Well, many leaders who ruled countries for even much shorter times than Castro has, have failed to step aside voluntarily, even with old age. Robert Mugabe is older than Fidel. My point was simply that for all the view of Fidel as kind of a megalomaniac and ruler, dictator, he has chosen not to cling to power in this case, and for the betterment of the revolution that he himself led, to step aside on his own.
Peter, what about the possibility of free elections in Cuba? I mean, that it would seem to me at this point that's pretty far down the road.
It would be very far down the road, so far that none of us can really foresee it. Raul Castro and the younger leadership are not going to move to put democracy in place in Cuba. They may open up the economy. They're certainly going to seek better relations with the United States eventually. But the socialist system has been institutionalized at this point, and is about, by the way, at the end of this year, going to be celebrating its 50th anniversary.
And the release of certain political prisoners, which of course. New leadership in Cuba might begin discussing that, perhaps, as a way to get the United States, for instance, to lift its trade embargo.
That's possible. They were just in talks with the Spaniards, and several dissidents are being released in the coming days. For the most part, Cuba won't negotiate what goes on internally. It will talk about external issues with the United States. And I just want to say, you know, responding to what Jaime Suliki was saying, is that it's in the United States' interest to change its policy. It doesn't necessarily have to correspond to a change in Cuba. We have our own motivations for that, not the least of which is that the next president will be looking at Cuba and at a revolution that's been there for 50 years and looking at a policy that has basically failed for 50 years. If that's not a reason to try something new, I don't know what is.
All right, let's take one more call. We're going to go to Ani, and Ani is calling from California. Hi, Ani.
Yeah, hi. I was wondering if you could comment on Raul's recent call for people to carefully, quote-unquote, criticize the revolution, and then specifically to comment on the public criticisms by some students at the Computer Science Institute, and then their retraction on the national Cuban TV which seemed to be a forced retraction, that they were threatened and then they had to retract their criticism.
All right, thanks for that question. I'm going to ask Peter to answer. Thanks.
Well, very
so much
quickly, since Raul has taken over as interim president, he has raised expectations of Cuba for economic change in things that affect their daily lives, transportation, housing, jobs, and wages. And he has elicited a debate at the student level, at the citizen level, at the grassroots level of input on this because he wants to make these changes. The students confronted Ricardo Alarcón with basic hard questions, and Alarcón wasn't prepared to answer. And this got sent around the world as some kind of growing dissident movement. But I think, in fact, the Cuban leadership, now that they've unleashed these expectations, have to be ready to meet them, and that will be the challenge that they face in the coming months and years.
Okay, one more quick call from Urban calling from Oregon. Urban?
Hi, thank you very much for taking the call. I think I'm kind of an older guy, and a Republican, but I really don't see why we haven't opened relations with Cuba a long time ago. I think it's counterproductive. We've dealt with the Soviet Union. We've dealt with North Korea. We've dealt with China, all these other places. And for us to just have this continuing heartburn over little tiny Cuba is ridiculous. And I think also that we should make the initiative. We should be doing something, starting the dialogue. Let's worry about the democracy thing later, if that's even really important, really, in the world scheme of things. And let's open it up and start talking.
All right. Thanks so much for that call, Urban.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly the next president of the United States is going to have that opportunity. Barack Obama has called for a dialogue with the perceived enemies of the United States because he feels that that's the most pragmatic way to confront differences. And certainly the same could be done with Cuba. The United States has mutual interests in the Caribbean. They have environmental interests. We have counter-narcotics interests. We have immigration interests. We have trade interests with Cuba. Our farmers want to sell their goods to Cuba. Shipping industry wants to have ships go back and forth from Cuba. There are economic reasons. And it can only, I think, lessen the power of the hardliners in Cuba who see a national security threat, which is a proven one over the last 50 years from the United States. If that threat goes away, I think we create some space for openings in Cuba in the future.
All right, Peter, thanks so much for being with us this afternoon. Peter Kornbluh is the director of the Cuba Documentation Project at the National Security Archive in Washington, D.C. He joined me here in Studio 3A.